This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.
This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Welcome to Sports Talk here on WKAR AM 870. I'm Matt Luckey here with Alex Sharg in the booth. We have a great show for you today. We will take a look at another potential black eye for the NCAA down at Auburn. We'll take a gander at the two new members of the Big Ten coaching fraternity and for basketball. And maybe we'll get back to that Brittany Griner to the NBA story, which apparently has some legs. But Alex, first and foremost, breaking news, the Tigers.
Well, welcome to the show, but welcome Jose Valverde.
Oh, my gosh.
Who would have thought we'd see the day
He's back.
Jose Valverde is a Tiger? Again, once removed.
Oh, man. I mean, two games into the season, one blown save into the season, and the Tigers are already going back to their ex-girlfriend, Jose Valverde, who, you know, things did not end well last year. And after a full offseason of saying that, you know, he's not in the picture, signing him is not an option, it's not going to happen, he's not coming back to the Tigers, it took a whopping two games for us to go crawling back. They sign him not 10 minutes ago. It's hard to believe. Tigers fans, give us a call, 517-355-9527, or toll-free at 877-952-7870. I just cannot believe it. I feel like anytime you panic in April like this, I think it's just a bad move. It's a hasty decision. I feel like, oh man, it just looks bad from a faith perspective in the bullpen now. And just why would you go back to that? I feel like after last year's, you know, borderline disaster, I feel like it wasn't an option. And they said so themselves. And now here he is, back in the flesh. Now, granted, he did just sign. It's a minor league deal with no major league obligation. So from the Tigers' perspective, it's sort of like a risk-free trial. And I think with Rondon going down to the minors for now, I think maybe they just kind of give those two guys a shot and whoever, you know, raises their game, you know, so to speak, will maybe get the job. But, you know, two games in, one blown save with, you know, these games against the Twins, the starters are only going five innings. So you're asking your bullpen to basically close out the second half of the game. And yeah, you know, they had a one-run lead and, you know, a two-run double off of Phil Koch. And there goes your lead and there goes your win. But I think this is a little bit too quick to push that panic button. Alex, what do you got?
Yeah, well, the problem about it is the Tigers really haven't had a safe situation. Yes, we look at the game the other day. The first game, yeah, we put Benoit in there. We had a significant lead. But it's the second game of the season for Detroit. This isn't midway through the season. You're scrambling after three or four blown saves. You are basically throwing in the dice before the game is over. Now, for the contrary, I do understand that, yes, it is a little early. And I'm sure if you are listening, if you are a Tiger fan in the mid-Michigan area, you are probably questioning this move yourself. Now, on the other side of it, there are teams out there that if they don't have a closer after maybe the first week, they may have made a splash on Valverde themselves. So I think the move doesn't necessarily mean that they're giving up hope. I just think that it's more of a safety concern in case another team snatches up their quote-unquote only option.
Now, I mean, that's a very good point. And apparently in the MLive report, Valverde has an out clause. So if he is not in the majors by May 5th, he can opt out. So maybe, you know, he's kind of playing the same game the Tigers are. You know, he wants a job for now, and if it doesn't work out and if he's not where he wants to be, he can always just bail and go find another job with one of those teams that you're alluding to.
Right.
So,
and,
I mean,
and let's look at the fall of Jose Valverde. Midway through the season, I mean, even 2-3 years ago, this guy was perennial all-star. This guy was the face of the franchise. He was the guy that fans were waiting to see when he came on the field. You look at other players in this organization. Of course, you have Cabrera, Verlander right there. But Jose Valverde brought the energy. He brought the personality to the field that most players did not on that Tiger team. Flashback to this past year, where basically the sky came falling down.
Yep.
Team started to pick up on his almost unhittable split-finger fastball. Team started to read that his two-seam wasn't really there. He could not locate his pitches. With his age, it seems that his arm was falling a little bit off in speed, too. His pitches were tailing a little bit. So when it comes to a closer's timeline of pitching, it looks like this is probably the demise of his career.
Right. And you know, the closer position is such a tenuous one anyway. I mean, you see guys that, I mean, for, like, look at a Jonathan Papelbon. Okay, so he gets to the Sox in like 05, I think, wins the World Series in 07, and it looks like, wow, they have a closer for his whole career. Like, he is going to be a Red Sox forever. You know, he blows a couple saves in the 09 playoffs, and by 2011, he's ran out of town. So it's like there's no safety being a closer. There's no job security. It only takes one blown save, and you lose that mental edge. And, you know, to come in at the end of a game and finish it out, that's got to be incredibly difficult. So, you know, clearly I don't envy their position, but it's such a mental game, and it only takes that one blown save, that one mistake, and it can haunt you forever. And you wonder after, you know, the disaster that was last year with Valverde, can he ever regain that confidence and that energy, like you said? I mean, it remains to be seen, and it'll be interesting to see. But, I mean, you know, coworkers here that are White Sox fans are laughing. I mean, it's just like this move is kind of embarrassing if you're a Tiger fan. I just feel like it's inexplicable at this moment in the season. It's far too early to make a move like this, although I do see your point about, you know, maybe denying the other teams just as much as snatching them up in terms of importance of the move. But, boy, oh, boy, I mean, you look at closers, they come out of nowhere. I feel like we maybe want to take our chances with somebody else, and that's definitely what the thought process was. But, you know, one blown save is all it took. I really thought that maybe we'd at least get to May. I really was hoping we'd get to June before the Tigers' bullpen would implode to such an extent. But sure enough, I mean, two games. It's not even through the first week of the season, and we're already trying to make moves and tinker with the roster, and boy, oh God, yeah, that is ridiculous. What a shocking development. A 3-2 loss, and there you go, back to the drawing board, and let's bring back Jose. So Tigers fans, you're in for a treat for the rest of the year. I hope Valverde sticks around. I think it'd be fun to watch, and I think it'd be a fun story to follow up on, so we'll see where that goes. But boy, oh boy, and just the entire Tigers organization right now has to be feeling like, oh man, this one could go either way, because it's either going to look like a big blunder, although, you know, they're positioning themselves that it's risk-free, so if it doesn't work out, they'll just let him go, and, you know, maybe that's how it'll work out. But you got to figure he's going to keep making headlines until this thing goes in one direction or the other. So that'll remain to be seen. Interested to see it. Give us your thoughts. 517-355-9527 or toll free at 877-952-7870. Now, yesterday, the big story in the NCAA was the Rutgers coach, Mike Rice, getting fired after a video was released of him just verbally and physically abusing his players during practices, you know, tossing basketballs at their heads from close distances, you know, kicking, shoving, anything you can imagine. And it just seems like every day there's a new story and another black eye here for the NCAA, as now reports are coming out from Selena Roberts, who is a former New York Times and Sports Illustrated reporter, that Auburn had changed grades to keep players eligible. Back in their title run, they offered money to NFL-bound seniors, or potentially NFL-bound seniors, to get them to stay, and they broke several recruiting rules under ex-coach Gene Chizik. So it just seems like a situation that when it was happening, everyone viewed pretty incredulously. I mean, I know that the Cam Newton recruitment stunk to high heaven, and I think everyone who wasn't an Auburn fan knew that, and now, you know, just 2 years down the road, and these things are coming out for real. And man, what is the quickest turnaround from a title being won to being stripped away? Because I think Auburn has the inside track on breaking that record. I you know, players like Michael Dyer were mentioned as possible players who had their grades changed. It says they had 9 players had their grades changed before the title game. I mean, you only field 11 at a time. That's basically a unit of your team, and they all were potentially ineligible to play in the biggest game of their careers.
Yeah, this really doesn't surprise me. I mean, ever since the Derrick Rose ACT scandal, you knew the link between academics and football was very, very competitive when it came to fielding the best team on the field.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the SEC is basically just like a lawless society, especially with football. I mean, you have oversigning, it seems like, every year, and now that's kind of moving into SEC basketball, too, with Calipari. But SEC football is, it seems like, you know, there might be some not-so-great reasons why they keep rattling off these national titles. Maybe the playing field isn't quite as level as the NCAA and the SEC would like everyone to believe it is. And when you hear stories like this, and I feel like a majority of the country is not surprised, and I think that's bad for the NCAA, it's bad for college football, it's bad for Auburn for sure. I don't know what kind of sanctions or penalties they might undergo here, but I think they'd have to be pretty darn severe on a scandal that is that big and, you know, involved. I mean, Florida State, granted, they had one of the biggest academic scandals ever, and all they got were a slap on the wrist and some scholarships, but this is one that people were on as it was happening. So I think that public view, in the public eye, this one is really, really bad because everyone knew it was happening as it was going on, and little to our surprise, it comes out now. I just feel like the South, man, the football over everything else, and winning apparently is worth doing just about anything. The lack of integrity there at Auburn is pretty alarming. Just an unsurprising yet still disappointing story from the SEC, and it just seems like they win at all costs, and it doesn't really seem like they particularly care. And when you read this article, that it's also on ESPN now, you see a lot of the players who were, you know, who were quoted in the original piece are kind of backtracking now, and you wonder, is that maybe some outside pressure from maybe boosters who were supporting Auburn football, maybe, you know, from fans who obviously don't want to see their team stripped of their first title since 1957, especially when you're in the same state as an Alabama and the same conference as, you know, of Florida and Tennessee and Georgia and all these other pretty illustrious programs. I mean, if you're Auburn, you're definitely going to protect that title at all costs, but looks like they're not going to hold on to it for too long because, you know, you break a rule, you get caught, you got to get punished, and it seems like maybe the heavy hand of the NCAA will come down there, but that remains to be seen. Maybe they'll just get a slap on the wrist because it's football, and that generates quite a bit of revenue, so we'll see where that goes. Alex, what do you think? Are you less surprised by Auburn or the Tigers signing Valverde?
Well, I'm probably less surprised by the Tigers signing Valverde just because when it comes to, you know, college football right now, I mean, this is a period where teams are just getting into, you know, that the spring practices. They just got their recruiting classes signed. I didn't expect this to come out necessarily, you know, when football really isn't in session. If you really investigate and you really look at the proof, this reporter must have been following these Auburn players for over a year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I feel like stories like this are always like, oh, this is over a five-year period I did some investigative
reporting. Now the only reason I'm not surprised about the Tigers, I mean, I'm least surprised with the Tigers signing Valverde is because they sent Rondon back and there's no closer at all. They have to get a permanent closer. If they want to make a run with the playoffs this year, they can't win without a permanent closer. I'm less surprised with them actually getting Valverde. I just was more surprised on when it was. I didn't think it would be this early, like you were saying.
Right. I mean, it is. Yeah. That's a May or June move, and they're just jumping the gun a little bit here. So it looks like with that we will nice natural point to take our first break. Please stay tuned for more sports talk here on WKAR AM 870.
A hunger strike's been growing at Guantanamo Bay. Prisoners object to the way their cells are searched, how their Qurans are handled, but also to open-ended imprisonment with, for most, no charges, no trial, and no prospect of release for men sometimes described as some of the most dangerous terrorists in the world. I'm Neil Conan. What's next at Gitmo? Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 p.m. right here on AM 870.
Good afternoon, and thanks for tuning in. Here's a look at weather for the next few days. Mostly sunny today. We'll have a high around 52. Partly cloudy overnight with a low around 30. A mostly sunny day on Friday with highs in the mid-40s tomorrow. Looking ahead to Saturday's forecast, rain showers possibly mixed with snow and highs in the mid-50s.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on AM 870 WKAR. Now we're going to move on here a little bit to the legacy coaches in the Big Ten. Now, yesterday, Minnesota announced it was hiring Richard Pitino, son of Rick, which I think that's what you should say. That should be his name. Richard Pitino, son of Rick. I think he has to introduce himself like that in any context. But that completes the Big Ten coaching fraternity, along with the other new arrival of Chris Collins at Northwestern. And you look at these hires, and Richard Pitino, he was a college manager at Providence, where his dad formerly coached. He was an assistant coach at Northeastern for a year. He went to Duquesne for a year as an assistant. Louisville assistant under his dad, Rick, for 2 years. Then he went to Florida to study under Billy Donovan for 2 years, another Pitino disciple. And now he returned to Louisville for one season as the associate head coach, moved on to Florida International, where he was last year, guided the Panthers, I believe, to an 18-14 record, 11-9 in conference. And Alex, my question, and to you, the viewers as well, or listeners as well, is he getting hired just because of who he is and what his name is? Is that the main appeal? I mean, I know he's got some great experience. He's learned from some great people, but is this just a name hire?
Well, if you look at his record, he was 18-14. And when you look at the quality of team that he coached for, that isn't elite by any means, but it's progress. It shows that he may have the potential. Now, there are other times where there are some coaching moves made that are a little unexpected. You'll see a coach that has maybe a 500 record at a school, or maybe did not have the best year, but maybe someone sees something in this coach that he has the potential. They're taking that risk. So am I surprised at the signing? Is this a name signing? No, just purely based because of the skills of the Pitino family, the reputation that, yes, he's had the influence of several very well-known coaches. But if this guy falters here and then he's hired by another team, then I would say it's a name signing.
Okay. Yeah, totally fair.
What do you think?
Coach D'Antonio, he was, what, 18-17 at Cincinnati or something in that area, and we hired him, and look where we've gone, you know, in football. So, I mean, and I know it's apples and oranges there, but at the same time, you know, these guys got to get a chance somewhere. I mean, and you look at these Brad Stevens and Shaka Smarts, it's like somebody gave them an opportunity somewhere along the line. So, I mean, I guess this is Pitino's shot. And it does seem, you know, he's obviously pretty green. I mean, 1 year as a head coach, and now he's in the Big Ten, which is the best basketball league in the country. At least that's what we were saying all season. But, you know, it just seems like to fire Tubby Smith and hire this new guy, I mean, obviously it looks like they're going to try and shake things up. And maybe this still ties into those 2014 recruits from Minnesota, you know, Tyus Jones and several others. But it just seems like maybe they're trying to get in on some of those players with a young, you know, kind of a brash guy. He's obviously well known because of his dad, and you know, he's been around the block. He understands coaching, and you get some young, youthful energy in your program, and maybe they land some recruits and start building something. I think Minnesota, their biggest gripe with Tubby Smith was just this sort of sense of complacency and, you know, just mediocrity, and they're going to go for broke, and this is either going to be one that, you know, they hit a home run or they strike out swinging. So it remains to be seen, but, you know, compare Richard Pitino with a Chris Collins, who Northwestern hired, and I honestly have to say I prefer this hire much more than Minnesota's hire. I think Northwestern really cranked out a home run. I mean, you have Chris Collins, who's son of Doug Collins, who is an NBA head coach, and, you know, he coaches the 76ers right now. So you have another coaching legacy coming in to the Big Ten, and, you know, he coached the Detroit Shock as an assistant. He was an assistant at Seton Hall under Tommy Amaker back when Amaker was still wearing turtlenecks at every game. He was an assistant coach at Duke for 13 years and the associate coach for the last five. So, I mean, if there's a guy who has experience at the highest level, I think Chris Collins would be the guy. He's a Chicago native, which obviously that's where Northwestern is located, just north of Chicago. So he's familiar with the area. He helped Duke land a John Shire out of Chicago and a Jabari Parker who, you know, obviously we all wish he was in Green, but I think Collins here was a big reason that he went to Duke. So I think you have a guy that can proven he can recruit. He's going to be in a talent hotbed in Chicago. And, you know, he can coach too because, you know, if you learn under Coach K for 13 years, some of that's going to rub off. I think you're bound to pick up some scraps of wisdom from this guy who is basically the biggest genius in college basketball over his career. So I think, you know, that's a great hire, especially for a program that's never been to the NCAA tournament. I think, you know, they're definitely in a different position than Minnesota is in terms of what they want out of their coach and what they think they can get out of their program. And I think, man, I think they just hit an absolute home run with Chris Collins. I think he's going to do big things there. I think he's going to guide them to an NCAA tournament berth sooner rather than later. I mean, you know, they're a little shy on talent right now, but again, when you're in a city like Chicago, there's going to be players there. And if you can get them to qualify at a school like Northwestern, then you're golden because those guys are going to be good and they're going to be pretty bright young men if they're getting into Northwestern. So I'm excited to see that. I think he's going to be the better coach at the Big Ten level. I don't know if he has quite the talent off the bat that a Patino will have, but I think he's going to build a program in the right way, and I think that's a scary little combo there. I think maybe Northwestern is going to bust out of the cellar a little bit. I think the Big Ten as a whole, it's just it's looking really good going forward. And Bill Carmody was, you know, often lauded as a great coach. He coached at Northwestern for over a decade. You know, he was consistent, but they never got over the hump. So now they're looking for a guy to get over the hump. And he's another guy like Richard Pitino, who's young. He's got some energy. He's clearly a good recruiter. I think he's going to do big things. And I think they made the absolute perfect hire. Now, in other potential Big Ten coaching news, Lawrence Frank, coach of the Pistons, is rumored to be one of the sought-after candidates for the Rutgers job, which just opened up yesterday after the aforementioned firing of Mike Rice. Now, Alex and listeners, call us at 517-355-9527 or toll-free at 877-952-7870. Alex, do you think in a million years Lawrence Frank would leave an NBA coaching job to go coach at Rutgers?
Just basically, before I get to Lawrence Frank, touching more on, the rumors in the NBA, things like this happen all the time. There was a rumor that Izzo was supposed to go to Cleveland. Now, would he ever do that?
I think that was a little bit more than a rumor. I think this is even less substantial than that was, but
right.
Keep going.
Anyways, would that have happened? Probably not. Now, would Lawrence Frank ever leave to go to a college-level coaching job? Yes, he would. And the reason being is that he's been in the pros and he's been unsuccessful now for the past 5 years. And if you cannot guarantee yourself a job in the professional level, then having a new build-up, start-up within the college level may be the move. We've seen coaches go from pros to college back to pros. So this isn't out of the question.
Right, and you know, and when you look at it, he grew up in Teaneck, New Jersey, so he's definitely got some roots there. He coached the Nets for 7 seasons, so he definitely has some roots there. So he's familiar with coaching in that area. His wife and kids still live in New Jersey, and earlier this year he had to miss a few games because of an unknown illness in his family. So clearly he's got ties to New Jersey, and I think maybe that's what Rutgers is kind of playing on and hoping that that is the main motivator. And at the same time, like you said, he hasn't been all that successful. I think, you know, he was pretty successful in his early years with the Nets, but that's when they had, you know, a Jason Kidd, and, you know, that's a bona fide NBA star, so that's going to help you out a little bit. Now, granted, I don't know how much you can judge the last few years as the Pistons head coach just because the Pistons are such a disaster, but you know, clearly they're struggling this year. I think maybe he gets one more season just because, I mean, look at the talent and the injuries that they've had this season. Not a lot to work with. and certainly not a lot of fan support. And that's another question. Do you think more people would show up at Rutgers basketball games or Pistons basketball games? I think that the fact that that's a valid question is a little alarming and disconcerting in terms of your Pistons fanhood. Boy, and you look at a Flip Saunders, a former Pistons coach who was rumored to be in the running for that Minnesota job. And he, you know, he lives in Minnesota. He's a native. So I feel like a lot of these schools maybe are just trying to throw these big names out there, throw these NBA guys out there, and then maybe that raises the level of coaches that are interested in the position. I mean, if you're looking at it and saying, wow, Rutgers is going after a Lawrence Frank, who is a fairly established coach at the NBA level. I mean, he's coached for almost 10 seasons. You know, and you look at that and you say, wow, maybe Rutgers is looking to move up. Maybe they're looking to make a big hire. And then they get a lower level candidate, but higher than they normally would. You know, maybe it just raises the level of you know, kind of the floor of coaches that they're looking at. And I think, you know, I don't think he'll leave. And I think the only way he would is if the Pistons let him go at the end of the year, which, of course, is a possibility. Anytime you have a team that's in the lottery, especially in sports and especially in the NBA, coaches have pretty short leashes. So, you know, too much losing and you're going to be out the door. So, you know, maybe they're trying to say, hey, you know what, your days are numbered in Detroit. Why not leave now? You know, take it, don't get fired. Just leave on your own terms, kind of do your own thing and start fresh here in your hometown, in your home state. And you know, build something up at the college level. Because, I mean, you saw Rick Pitino, man, he's all over the show. You know, he was great, great success at the college level, went to the pros, coached the Celtics pretty terribly for a few years, and then he got sent back down to the college level, and now Louisville is you know, basically at the height that Kentucky was when they were in their heyday. So it just seems like some coaches are cut out for one or the other, and you got to kind of find your niche. And I think if Lawrence Frank was interested in trying to coach at the college level, more power to him. But I think for now, I don't see him leaving. And I think it might have just been maybe a PR move by Rutgers to try and attract some bigger names. But interesting developments in the coaching community, to say the least. Now let's move on a little more. Yesterday, we talked a little bit about it. This Brittany Griner, Mark Cuban, back and forth, I guess you would call it. Mark Cuban said, you know, if she's available, we'll try her out. We'll give her a workout. We'll maybe draft her in the second round. And you know, obviously this generated a lot of buzz and a lot of thoughts coming from several different sources. I mean, Gino Auriemma, who, you know, built the basketball mecca that is Connecticut women's basketball, said that it would be an absolute sham if they did, and that it shouldn't happen and really can't happen. But at the same time, you have a Nancy Lieberman who says, go for it, girl. I mean, and Lieberman, who played in the U.S. Basketball League in the late 80s, she said, if Griner called her tomorrow for advice about the NBA, she would tell her, do it, girl. You can do this. You should go out there if you're afforded the opportunity, because how many people in their lifetime would? You're going to do what nobody has ever done. Now, you know, Lieberman, who had some brief NBA summer league stints with, I believe, the Lakers and the Jazz. So she's clearly experienced, you know, at that level. She was also a point guard, though. So the physicality, and that's basically Brittany Griner's main, you know, her biggest advantage at the college women's level, would totally be gone if she went to the pros and started, you know, messing around in the post with guys that are just massive and can jump higher and are faster and quicker and stronger and all that jazz. So I feel like it'd be interesting to see. I would like to see it. I mean, it'd be an interesting story. I feel like, if anything, it would get people watching the summer league, which I feel like a lot of people don't even know exists at this point. I mean, it's basically just NBA junkies and that's it. So, you know, anything to generate some interest in the league. What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, the question is still up in the air. I mean, what question are you referring to?
Well, just would you be interested if she signed a deal with the Mavericks for the summer league?
Would I be interested if I'm the Mavericks, or would I be interested if I'm the NBA?
Would you be interested if you're a fan of the NBA?
If I'm a fan. So is it more the matter of watching her play?
Definitely.
Well, would I tune in? I think that's an obvious question. I think everybody would watch the game of Brittany Griner as a woman in the NBA. I think there was something I saw the other day online. I think it was ESPN reported something about back in 1957 where there was a woman who tried out for the Los Angeles Lakers, mm-hmm. But she did not actually get to the professional level. Now, the spokesman of this, of course, Mark Cuban, he is very similar to Mark Hollis in the way that he's very experimental,
right,
with moves. He's very experimental of what's next. Can Brittany Griner play in the pros? I think she can, but how would players take her? What would players, you know, go a little easy on her? Would they need to be a little tougher on her? Will she just get ousted in her first game? But yes, the obvious question, if you're a fan and if you're listening, 517-355-9527, is yes, you would definitely watch Brittany Griner in the pros. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, now, I think you would for sure.
Would the NBA be interested in bringing up Brittany Griner? I think, yes, they would, because of the fact that it can bring in more viewers. But would the Mavericks be interested in Mark Cuban? I don't think that's the right move for that team, mainly because that Maverick team right now has some issues of its own.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they have pretty much half their roster is signed to a one-year contract. So, I mean, they swung for the fences in free agency last year, and they came up absolutely empty. So, you know, they missed on Deron Williams.
Right.
They missed on Dwight Howard.
And the other thing is, if the Mavericks make this move, and if Mark Cuban is tied to this move, then Brittany Griner to the pros would mainly be an entertainment purpose, not the fact that she can actually play.
Right, exactly. It would... You know, and Auriemma said it would be a sham. You know, it's all just a public relations move, and to an extent, you kind of have to agree to it with him. And from a business perspective, it makes sense. It would definitely generate interest in an area that there really isn't any. And again, that's the summer league. So, but the biggest problem with that logistically is that the summer league is right in the middle of the WNBA season. I mean, she is pretty much locked in as the number one pick to the Phoenix Mercury in April, just a few weeks here. April 15th is the WNBA draft. So it just seems like, would you leave your career to try to make a summer league roster for a few weeks? I mean, granted, it's your rookie season and looks like she's going to have a long career, but considering the type of game changer she has been at the women's college basketball level and the potential she has to really generate some serious interest in the WNBA, I feel like it's in the WNBA's best interest to keep her. But, you know, if maybe they wanted to throw her out there, give her a few weeks of run with the guys in the summer league, and then maybe when she comes back, maybe that drives even more fans to go see WNBA games. So, I mean, there's two sides to the coin in pretty much all these stories, and this one especially. I feel like it's a tough call, and it'd be interesting to see, but I, you know, at first it just seems like another Mark Cuban ploy for attention, and it very well could be, and it looks like it's working because it's the second day we've talked about it, and it's all over the internet. I mean, it was the front story on USA Today, so, I mean, clearly it's generating interest already, even just the thought of it, and it sparks some debate, and it's an interesting story to follow up on, but I don't think it'll happen. And, you know, I certainly don't think they'll draft her, you know, and Cuban said, you know, how many players that go after, you know, the 50th pick in the draft make it? And it's true, not very many. So why not take a shot like this? But at the same time, for a franchise that needs all the help they can get, I mean, they made the playoffs, I believe, the last like 12 seasons or something, and this is the first year where it looks like it's not going to happen. So I think Mark has bigger fish to fry in terms of the Mavericks as opposed to Brittany Griner joining the ranks. So I think maybe he should prioritize what he's trying to do with his franchise and try and get some wins out there instead of looking at some of this unwarranted, well, not unwarranted, that's the wrong word, just, you know, non-basketball related attention. So with that, it looks like we will take another quick break here. Please stay tuned for more sports talk on WKAR AM 870.
On the next Fresh Air, life as a Mormon missionary, going door to door proselytizing when you have doubts about your faith. We talk with Ryan McIlvain, author of the new novel Elders, based on his 2 years as a Mormon missionary in Brazil. He's from a sixth generation Mormon family, but left the church in his mid-20s. Join us. On the next Fresh Air, life as a Mormon missionary, going door to door proselytizing when you have doubts about your faith. We talk with Ryan McIlvain, author of the new novel Elders, based on his 2 years as a Mormon missionary in Brazil. He's from a sixth generation Mormon family, but left the church in his mid-20s. Join us.
Welcome back here, Sports Talk, WKAR AM. 70.
Good afternoon. Here's a look at the weather forecast for mid-Michigan. Mostly sunny for the rest of today. We'll have a high around 52 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight with a low around 30. On Friday, mostly sunny with highs in the mid-40s. And Saturday's outlook, rain showers, possibly mixed with snow, and highs in the mid-50s.
Welcome back here. Sports Talk AM 870 WKAR. Matt Ludke here, Alex Sharg in the booth. A little technical difficulty there, but we're over it, and we're back. And Alex, let's keep talking Tigers. Now, the division is pretty much theirs to lose in the eyes of all the prognosticators and all the publications. I mean, they're slated for first, another first-place season, and maybe that has more to do with the state of the division than it does with the state of the Tigers, especially with our first segment basically being about how they're panicking about the bullpen. And when you have a team that has such a glaring weakness, I mean, to have them be the consensus, you know, division winner is a little alarming, and it kind of speaks to the overall quality of the division. But, I mean, when you look at how the year has started, I mean, the White Sox look really competitive. Cleveland's winning games. I mean, they beat the Blue Jays, who were a popular pick from the AL East this season. It just seems like maybe there's more to the division than we thought initially, and maybe the Tigers don't have quite as tight of a grip on the division crown as people thought they did coming in. And I know it's early, you know, considering that it's April 4th, 5th. I mean, there's a long way to go. Baseball is certainly a marathon. So, you know, things could change in a heartbeat, especially with possible injuries and, you know, slumps and all that. I mean, it's a crazy game and there's a long way to go, but it just seems like, every time it seems like a team is, you know, pegged to be the best in the division, especially with baseball, I think things can go wrong so quick that all these things change. I mean, who knows? Maybe in 20 games, the Tigers are 10 games under 500, and then we're really hitting the panic button, and maybe we're going to be cruising to another division title. Nobody knows, and I think that's the beauty of the game. But Alex, do you think that the Tigers still have, despite these early troubles, do you think they still have this division on lock?
It's too early to say if they really do. And of course, that's the answer that most people would say and give. But do they have the tools to win the division? Yes. And if you compare them to most teams don't have a Triple Crown winner and an AL MVP and a pitcher. So pure talent alone, yes, this is theirs to lose. Now, if they don't find this closer, will that make or break this team? I think obviously yes. I think with most teams, there isn't one team that does very well in the World Series that doesn't have a permanent closer. You need to find a permanent closer, whether he's good or you know, subpar. There needs to be someone permanent, and I think that's the first step with this team.
Right, so just getting someone established in that role. I mean, because, you know, the saying with quarterbacks is, you know, if you have more than one quarterback, you don't have any at all. And maybe that's kind of the deal with closers, too. I mean, if you have more than one option at closer, you don't have any options at closer. And it, you know, clearly they're looking for in every possible avenue for that permanent closer. And maybe it'll be Valverde. Maybe it'll be Rondon. Who knows? Maybe Phil Koch will recover from yesterday and have a great season. I mean, it remains to be seen, and there's obviously 160 games left, so a lot of baseball to be played. So I think that's why this Tigers move with Valverde is so surprising, because it just seems like if you weren't going to bring him in for spring training, why on earth are you bringing him in now? And the loss yesterday kind of exacerbates all the preseason issues that people were worried about. I mean, that was pegged as the Achilles heel of the Tigers this season. And sure enough, two games in, there it goes. I mean, the bullpen just implodes and Tiger fans are panicking, although I don't really think that many are, but apparently the Tiger front office is panicking. So, I mean, you look at it and it's anybody's guess. And, you know, baseball season is just such a long, tough road. I think it could go any way. And I really am in no position to predict anything with baseball, especially this early in the season. I mean, wake me up in June and maybe let me take a look at the records and then we'll see where teams are slated to finish. But right now, it's just too early to tell. And it's just funny that people put so much stock into these preseason predictions, because at the end of the day, I mean, with a sport that has as many games and as many variables as baseball, it just seems foolish to even try. But I mean, hey, that's a moneymaker, and that's what people are going to do. Now, we're gonna change things up a little bit for this last segment. Alex, yesterday, Aaron and I were discussing after the show just about, and we discussed on the air a little bit about the lack of attention and publicity and, you know, focus on the women's college basketball game. And, you know, we were just throwing out ideas, and one that came up was potentially lowering the rims in women's college basketball. And possibly even the WNBA. Now, what are your thoughts? Because I have some stats here. I'm going to bring them up. So you go ahead, tell me what you think, and then I'll hit you with some information.
So what I think, from which perspective? Do I think that people would watch it more?
Well, the main argument, and this comes directly from Gino Auriemma, who, like Rick Pitino, is all over the all over the show today. But he's suggesting that they lower the rim 7 inches. He says, let's say the average men's player is 6'5", and the average woman is 5'11". Let's lower the rim 7 inches, and he says you would not even notice. And he says that the women's game would become more entertaining because you would have fewer missed layups because players are actually shooting at the rim. Shooting percentages would go up, and there would be more tip-ins. And when you look at the shooting percentages in college basketball, in 2011-2012, there were only 11 Division I women's teams that shot 45% or better. And you compare that to the men's side, where 109 Division I teams shot 45% or better. So when you look at it, and I, you know, speaking from experience, I mean, when you lower the rim, it's not just, you know, close shots and interior shots and layups. I mean, long-range shots, I mean, it's much easier to shoot on a lower rim, and they're already using a smaller basketball. I mean, the size of the ball is different, so it's already a different game. Mm-hmm. Do you think this would increase interest in women's college basketball if they lowered the rims?
Yeah, a couple pointers, actually, in this is a great topic. First off, you look at the fact that there's already a women's basketball. There's already a smaller ball. Now, if you look at other sports, softball, compared to baseball,
smaller field.
Girls don't play with the first off, they don't play with the baseball.
Right.
They play with the softball because, one, it's easier to see, easier to catch, you know, better probably for their hands. And yes, it's a way smaller field. So if you compare this to basketball, it's not like this is a huge reform. This isn't a wow. If you're changing the height of a rim, and you know, that's a major move to the sport. You know, that's completely disowning the sport. I don't think that's that big of a question. Would it raise viewership? Hard to say, because as I received many texts to my phone about the women's Final Four of an ESPN update, personally, I think the majority of people really don't care if, you know, a women's team makes the Final Four rather than, you know, a men's March Madness.
Right.
The women's sport right now is so direly low that ESPN needs to send updates about viewership in a game between two women's teams to get some audience. Will this help? I think this has the best potential of all, and I think the only reason it will help was not because of tip-ins, but I think dunks. I think the more that there is more flashiness, more entertainment, yes, tip-ins are entertaining, but I think dunking and new originality within the women's basketball game, I think, is the best move.
Right, and I mean, you look in it, you know, dunking and just playing above the rim, kind of. I mean, that's why people go to see NBA games. They don't go to see people hit mid-range jump shots. They go to see Blake Griffin jump 5,000 feet in the air and throw down a vicious dunk. I mean, and that's what people go for. That's what the top 10 is. You know, it's dunks, it's high flying plays, it's stuff like that. So, and even if it's you know, more intricate layups, or you know, you're making more shots, scores are going to go up. I feel like at the very least, it would kind of drum up a little interest. And Auriemma gave these thoughts before the Olympics last year. And maybe this is, you know, classic Gino, a lot like Mark Cuban, where he's just trying to posture and get some more interest in the women's game. And I think he's going to do that by any means necessary. And whether he has ulterior motives, maybe, you know, trying to raise his coaching profile, because he's certainly a legend, but I mean, he's, you know, everyone always said, you know, he's a legend in the women's game, and maybe he wants to raise his personal profile and just become a legend in the coaching community in general. And I don't know if he particularly needs that, because you look at a coach like Pat Summitt at Tennessee for forever and ever, and she's easily on the Mount Rushmore of coaches, I think, you know, regardless of sport. She was an ambassador to the game. She was a great coach for decades, and you know, all she did was win, and that's really what you need to do to raise your profile, and Auriemma is certainly taking care of that. But lowering the rims 7 inches, you know, clearly it's not going to be a huge difference, but the main argument against it is that you have players growing up, you know, shooting everywhere on 10-foot rims, and you know, adjustable rims are more expensive. You know, it costs more money to buy a rim that can change height. So, you know, clearly, you know, it's not like a lot of municipalities are going to put in adjustable rims or adjustable hoops in their parks and stuff. So, you know, you're not going to see tons of changes there. And then it's also argued that, you know, you'd have these girls who practice on a certain height all their lives and get to college, and then the rims are lowered. But I don't know if I totally buy that, because, you know, if you're playing and, you know, you're shooting around and you're just in your driveway and you change the height of the rim, yeah, you know, there's an adjustment period, but I think you give yourself a little bit of time, and you're right there. I mean, you get the form, you get used to the height, you get used to everything. And I feel like if a girl is going to be, you know, constantly practicing basketball, I don't think that 7 inches is going to tremendously shake up her, you know, shooting stroke or any of that. I don't think it's going to tear apart shooting percentages because players aren't used to a new height of the rim. I think it all just boils down to practice. And as soon as you get used to it, I mean, I know that, you know, growing up in middle and high school, my buddies and I would get together, we'd play on two tiny hoops. We called it mini hoops, and it was probably the most fun I've ever had on a basketball court, because me, a lifetime 35% shooter from the field, is all of a sudden hitting 60% of my jump shots, and I feel like Ray Allen out there. So, I mean, and I was certainly more interested in basketball as a result. So I can see where Auriemma is coming from. I don't know if it'll happen. And Nancy Lieberman, again, I think they are just two opposing forces in the world of women's basketball. You know, she argued that, you know, we as women we're starting to get to the rim anyway. You know, more and more players now are starting to dunk. And I think that's kind of, it's a little bit of wishful thinking, because, you know, for every Candace Parker and Brittany Griner who are throwing down breakaway dunks in games, you have literally 95% of the women's basketball, you know, athletic group that can't and doesn't. And, you know, so you get these once in a generation players. I don't know if you should base your thoughts just on these, you know, the elite of the elite. You know, it's not like people are calling for the men's rim to be heightened because so many players are playing at that level. I feel like you got to make a change, maybe.
Right. And I think the bigger question is, why 7 inches? Why not a whole foot or two?
Well, the reason Auriemma said 7 inches is because in women's volleyball, the net is 7 inches lower than in men's volleyball. Did you know that?
I didn't know that, but I think that's not a very good reason, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, I think he was just doing it for comparison's sake. But yeah, I mean, it's you know.
Right, and volleyball is completely different. But in terms of jumping ability, yes, that's a fact. Do other coaches agree with this? That's something else that I think they definitely should look into. Whoever is responsible in the NCAA or professional leagues in terms of the overall basketball reputation, they should lock onto this article and this statement, and then maybe do a little bit of investigation from there.
And you know, as with a league that's kind of struggling with exposure, like the WNBA especially, I feel like maybe it's an option. You know, I mean, even if you leave everything normal at the college level, and obviously all the way down through, you know, high school and younger kids, if you can, you know, the goal of the WNBA is to make money. I mean, it's a business. You know, they want to make money, and if you're going to generate interest and start selling tickets, maybe this is a move you consider. Maybe you think about lowering the rims, changing the game a little bit, and starting to get some of that above the rim, high flying action that has made the NBA such a huge success. I mean, the NBA is basically printing money at this point, and I think maybe the WNBA could try and get in there, but. It remains to be seen. It's an interesting thing, and clearly it's just a hypothetical. I mean, I don't know what is more legitimate and what has a better chance of actually happening, Brittany Griner playing in the NBA or the WNBA lowering the rims. So that'll be an interesting thing to see, but I don't think either are going to happen, but both long shots, but interesting theories regardless.
Right. Well, we've got a couple minutes left, and anything else that you deem pretty poor. What about Michigan State sports for a second here?
Oh, yeah. What do you want to talk about?
Well, you know, with this basketball team, very disappointing. You're seeing this Michigan team in the Final Four now, game coming up this week. How far can this Michigan team ideally get? And second of all, what does this mean for Michigan State? In-state recruiting, what does this mean for the future of this starting five? Are we going to be comfortable with seeing Costello and Ghana next year, starting in place of Payne and Nix?
Well,
Potentially Payne.
I don't think we can count him as gone yet. That's just my optimistic thinking there. But as far as Michigan's run, I think they can absolutely beat Syracuse. I would still lean towards Syracuse just because of the crazy defense that they're playing at the moment. And Louisville would potentially be a huge test as well. But, I mean, since they're in the Final Four and the way they've played against everybody but Kansas, I mean, they look like they are clearly one of the best teams in the country. So they have a great shot to win it all. Whenever you're in a Final Four, you have a great shot to win it all. Unless you go in one of the years that MSU went and you play North Carolina from 09 or North Carolina from 05, you know, just North Carolina. They are a boon to us, so we'll see about that. But in terms of in-state recruiting, you know, I don't know if it's that big of a deal just because, A, we're sort of just a regional recruiting school anyway. We get a lot of talent from Indiana and Ohio and obviously Michigan too, but I don't know if it'll change that much. Plus, I mean, you look at it and there's only 15 or 12 spots on a roster, so it's not like you need all that many players, and certainly Michigan is starting to pick it up. I mean, they have Indiana Mr. Basketball Zach Irvin coming in next year, a good point guard in Derek Walton. So they're clearly building something, and they're definitely going to capitalize off the momentum of the Final Four, but I don't know if we have to worry about like a changing of the guard.
Mm-hmm. Well, another thing to keep in mind is eligibility for a player to maintain his NCAA eligibility. The deadline is April 15th. To declare yourself for the professional leagues, the deadline is April 28th. So if Adrian Payne doesn't make a decision by the 15th of coming back to the college, then worst comes to worst, he can play overseas for a year if he doesn't maintain his NBA eligibility in time. But he's got to make a decision within the next 10 days. And Tom Izzo, personally, after reading a couple articles, doesn't even know if that's the right move for him. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. And in terms of Michigan, like you were saying, of course, great class coming in, Mr. Basketball to Indiana. But Michigan State always gets solid in-state recruits, so I wouldn't count that out.
Yeah, I you know what? As long as we have Tom Izzo at the helm, I'm not going to hit the panic button, you know? I'm totally secure in the direction of our program and where we're going. I don't think Michigan really has anything to do with it. I think it's less important than it is in football. But that's going to do it for our show. Man, quick show. Thank you, Alex, in the booth, hanging with me all day. And thank you for listening. Please be sure to stay tuned tomorrow for more sports talk here on WKAR East Lansing. We'll be back at 105. Please have a pleasant evening, and I'll hear from you tomorrow here on WKAR AM 870.
This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.